You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African peoples, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity. For they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. the relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers. My name is William Rogers, and we welcome you tonight to the Black Reality Think Tank. The great Elder James introducing, I got my mojo working. So hopefully tonight we all will have our mojo working so that we can bring it as we continue to liberate our people. And so here at the Black Reality Think Tank, tonight we are going to have a very interesting discussion. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes and kind of why. Why do we need to discuss this topic? So we thank you so very much for being with us here. For those of you that are listening via the Internet, you have an opportunity to call us. If you'd like to contribute with a question or just a statement, this is a call-in format. Our number here is area code 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So just call us when we get ready. We'll be opening the lines very soon to hear from our audience. We always do this as just a community forum. Sometimes we do bring on guests with lectures and have special topics and discussions. But tonight, this is the same format. We're going to listen to our community and our panel. But before I go on, I just want to kind of mention some not real good news. one of our community panel brothers, Brother Timothy, lost his partner. She is deceased. The funeral will be tomorrow. And he had called me to let me know, and I told him that we would make sure that I tell our audience so we can send our prayers to the ancestors, to the Creator, that they will comfort him. In this time, he is very distressed, obviously. That is his mate. He has been with her for a long time. He told me tonight, he said, He said, Dr. Rogers, she's the one that would always tell me, don't forget to listen to Time for Awakening. Don't forget to listen to Black Reality Think Tank. Or even when sometimes while he was there, he would be tired, he'd fall asleep. He said she would come by and shake him, tell him, wake up, listen, you need to hear this. So anyway, he wanted to let us know she is gone. And she has now joined the ancestral world. And so we appreciate him for telling us that. I do have a number here that it was, and I wanted to. Yeah, I do have. Her name is Brenda Lee Billups. That is her name. She transitioned on October the 13th, and her homegoing service will be October 28th, 2021, at the Church of the Redeemer Baptist in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 1440 South 24th Street. Philadelphia, 19146. Again, her name is Brenda Lee Billups. And this is his mate. This was his lifetime mate. And so now she has joined the ancestors. So I wanted to let us know, be sure to send him your prayers to the ancestors, send the prayers to him, I mean, to the Creator, to comfort him at this very difficult time. Okay, the Black Reality Think Tank, as we've often said, is a really a historical research network that we have designed to teach, to learn, to empower, and provide information relating to our people and African people throughout the planet. We use this radio format and this podcast, our websites, and our other forms of social media and tools to try to support this mission. We try to go back and we try to look at where our ancestors were paving the way for us and question ourselves and go to the mirror and ask, are we doing what they set in motion for us to do? So our content and focus is the journey of our ancestors. Our goals and objectives of this program is to understand the past, dissect the present, and support implementing a meaningful future for generations to come. So that's what we try to do here every Tuesday night. And so sometimes our topics may be a little different. A lot of things are going on in our world. We can't address them all, but we sometimes just want to go back and look at things and look at what our ancestors were doing. We're living in some very difficult and trying times now. We've seen some things that we have never seen in our lifetime, at least for myself. I have several years on this planet, and in the 77 years that I have lived, and those that where I was conscious of my surrounding environments, so I would say maybe 72 years, I have never seen anything like what we're seeing now, never heard of anything like we've seen now. And so we have to do some examining, because I think about the future of those that we are responsible for bringing onto the path, and whether or not that mission is going to be successful. So we obviously reach out to the Creator, we reach out to the ancestors to help us develop these platforms, develop these agendas, so that we can do the things that are necessary to carry forth. So that's what we are doing. And so tonight we decided to go back and take a look at a very critical piece of our history, one that is not quite often talked about, one that is not quite often discussed among our people, and that is that spiritual realm, but not the spiritual realm from religiosity or denominationalism, not that. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at that foundational spiritual realm that Big Mama had. I had a Big Mama, and I'm sure that many of you had a Big Mama. And she was very, very active with me. And I recall so many things that she did that didn't have anything necessarily to do with religiosity. Now, she was a born-again Christian Baptist, scripture-quoting, Bible-toting Christian. But there was some other stuff my Big Mama had that went beyond that. And it wasn't done in a formal way. It wasn't done textbookish. It was done naturally. And I sat sometimes and watched, and then there are times that I would ask her, Grandma, what you doing? and just mind your business, boy, and shut up. Sit down. Be quiet. And she would go about doing some of the things. And we're going to talk about that tonight. And we're going to talk about how that impacts us and how we need to maybe go back and look at that. Go back and let's twist this around a little bit. We got some brilliant minds that listen to our program. I'm so happy that says they're well-read, well-studied, well-experienced. And so you know what I'm talking about. So I'm preaching to the choir. So I want to, but we got to go back and review that and find out how we can use that. How can we use that to stop the travesty of our walk, of what we're going through now? How can we stop somebody from putting 3 bullets in the head of a 3-year-old? How do you stop that? How do you deal with that? And then kill the mother. And then kill themselves. What is that? We know we have several things that we've said, trauma, generational trauma, just all kind of, but there's something else going on here. We've got a disease that's wiping out our people. It is wiping them out of the planet. They are leaving here. Many of us have been close to the brink of that, myself. And having a chance to feel that I'm out of here and what that was like and where, as I mirrored my life sometimes laying there in that hospital bed. So how do we put some of this ancestral knowledge into action? What do we need to do in order to do that? And we've talked about several things on this program. But sometimes, you know, we need to go back and take a look at it again, because sometimes we took it very lightly. Unfortunately, one of the things that I think creates this loose link, and it's the idea, and this is why I want to look at it from the spiritual realm, is we sometimes forget what happens in a system of captivity. African people, or people who have been embarked into a system of captivity. Our ancestors were captured and chained and bound, put in the holds of ships and shipped across a huge body of water to a foreign land that they knew nothing about. And when you capture a people, we have to consider what is necessary to complete that capture. What is it that you have to do? You just can't capture them and bring them over here and say, okay, y'all, you can't go nowhere. You're going to stay here and work with me. You can't do that. You got to do something else. And one of the things that we have learned and our scholars have told us and our ancestral teachers have told us is that they had a systematic plan. The first thing that you do as a captor to the captive people that you deal with is you take their means of communication. So you take their tongue and don't allow them to speak the language that they speak. When our ancestors were put into the holds of ships, they were mixed in with different languages and different voices. They couldn't understand each other. They could do it symbolically, but they could not do it through speech because they were mixed. And so the Igbo and the Yoruba and the Fon and the Iwe people and the different nations of Africa were put into the holds of those ships, and they knew that they were brothers from the motherland, but they did not know their language, and so they could not communicate, which would have created. So you take the tongue, and then you give them the tongue of the captor. So every person in the sound of my voice speaks the tongue of the captor. You speak German, which is English. English is German. And you speak that language every day of your life. You teach it to your children. And you have no basic knowledge of your foreign land. And you may take a course in some of the languages and do that. But it's just recreational. And it's not really for substance and liberation purposes. Just some of us. I'm not saying everybody's that way. So you take the tongue. The second thing you do as a captor to your captives is you take the womb. You take the incubator of life and you instill into that womb your seed. You put your seed in there so that from now on the reproductive process will consist of your bloodline. And you definitely what is often called today in modern warfare, ethnic cleansing. So you clean the bloodline. To clean it to the point that they don't even know who they are. They don't know whether they Negroes, they coloreds, they blacks, they whites. They don't know. They mulattoes, quadroons, octoroons, hundreds and several names that are instilled upon people that were captured by the Europeans. And so as a result of that, they've lost their identity. They have no identity. We forget that sometimes in our liberation fight, that we have to find a way to gain our identity back for our children and then for ourselves. Who are we? Everybody would probably have a different answer for that. I'm an African American. No, you're not, somebody would say. I'm an African. Or I'm... At one time, people were fighting to be named Negroes. They didn't want to be called a color. There's no such thing as a black land. And then our ancestors told us that whatever you call yourself, it has to be rooted to land and who you are. So that's the second thing you do. And then the third thing you do to complete the process of captivity is to take the god. And you give the god... You give them a god that represents you. And that god is one that looks like them, talks like them, speaks the philosophy and the system that they speak. And that is the process of captivity. So if that is the case, in order for liberation, you would have to break and deprogram those three processes. And so and sometimes we don't know how deep they run. So a lot of our work and our agenda building, it has to address those areas. Not easy. I'm not quite sure how you would totally do that, but those are the things that we would have to focus on. And so tonight I decided that we should take a look maybe at the spiritual system, because it is one of the most powerful ones that's taken. That has to be taken first. And that probably, if you had to rate these three, I think that would probably be number one. I think number two would be, for me, I would think that they would want to change that bloodline and do it quick so that those that come out are those that have your blood in a lot of cases. And we've seen that in history. We know what happened. And then, obviously, the third one is at that point to take the tongue so that they speak the language. And that'll come almost naturally anyway when you get into the captivity system and environment that you're living in. So tonight, the subject matter that we are looking at is the real deal African spiritual system. It had been around for a long time in the African continent. It has a history. It has a background of what it can do and what it does of those that were there. It wasn't something that you had to go get a book and learn. It was just natural. It was taught by your parents. It was taught by your teachers and your neighbors. It was passed along. It had power. It was connected to the Creator. And we didn't lose that when you came here either. That was not lost. And as much as the Europeans wanted to say that you did not have that ability, that you lost that when you came across the Atlantic, it just wasn't true. We gained that. We understood the herbal relationship with the planet, the plant life, and what that meant to our health and well-being. We knew what to take when we were sick or had an upset stomach. There were no drug stores during that time. Pharmaceutical plants There were no pills, cough syrups, those things that were natural products. And they healed quickly. And they didn't cost what you see today. And so this system of spirituality has that built into it. There have been many names that they've called it. They've called it the voodoo, the hoodoo, and so forth, just all kinds of names. But it's basically the African spiritual system. It's different than a lot of the European ways. And Christianity's mission and goal was to destroy it. Their goal was to destroy that and to turn the African to a Christian. That was a book that was printed back in the roughly end of the post-slavery period called How to Make the Negro a Christian. And the Christianity had to be instilled, and it had to be instilled good and powerfully in a way that you would then begin to rely upon that and on nothing else. And there's a lot of the history that our ancestors wrote about and talked about in terms of using this system that was just horrible. And so it really is the basis of who we are. And getting back into understanding how that system worked and how it helped our ancestors survive is critical. Its origin is deep. It goes all the way beginning to a group of people that were in the what we know today as the Congo area. They were a group of early people called the Twa people, T-W-A. They were verse beginning in their relationship, according to most interpreters and historians and anthropologists and those who study African history, and I'm talking our people now. I'm not talking about outsiders. I'm talking what our people have said, is that their basic need for religion and spirituality was to understand the universe, understand what is it that we see. What is that big ball of fire in the middle of the sky every day? What is that? Who is that? What does it do? I'm talking early man now. I'm talking early person. When there were no books, no Bibles, and no songs, and nothing. It's just naturalness. You're just sitting there with your family, your people, and this big ball of fire comes up every morning. What is that? Who is that you call? And so a system was designed among the inhabitants to understand what that was. And they created it along with the theory because it had a philosophy to it. That ball of fire did things. It comforted you. It provided light. It provided coolness and water. And you began to see it do different things. It made the crops and the greenery do different things and made it so that I could eat it and made it palatable to my family so we could eat the right products. And I guess through trial and error, you learn what is eatable and what is not. And so those are some of the early anthropological ideas that we get from looking at this system. So when we look at the system of Ma'at and we talk about how that works, you're looking at people attempting to explain nature and the environment in which they live and what that environment means to them and how is it going to control our thought, our life, our walk, our day-to-day activity, and everything. And what is it that we must learn from this system? We notice that it does have a certain kind of truth to it that's real, that you have to pay attention. There is a certain balance and a harmony to it that it has. So when the sun comes up in the morning, it continues to move to the middle of the sky, and then it goes to the end and it leaves us. So there's an order to that. It's regimented. And then there are things that operate in this natural area that if I misappropriate or do wrongly, it'll come back on me. And it has a reciprocal effect. And they do. And so on and on. These are some of those principles that we look at. And so when we look at the master keys for understanding ancient Kemet, which was not the first. I'm not of the school of thought that Kemet was the first. I think we have to go to the Twa and then move from there. But anyway, that's not what we're here to do today. But I think the one thing that we can come to a conclusion to is that most African religions, regardless of where geographical area were, was similar in a lot of ways. There was an African historian, theologian by the name of John M. Bitty. M-B-I-T-I wrote a book called African Religion and Philosophy. And he said all African religions will have to be understood, that they are complex and diverse. They're not simple to understand. The way that you make markings on your skin has a meaning to that. The name that you give to a person has a certain meaning to the ancestral and the world of nature. So you're given a name based on that understanding. There's a wisdom to that and how it's done. So they're complex and diverse. So when you see those markings on the African mask that they make, and you get an African mask and look at it, and it may look like it's something that might be scary, or you know, it has a distorted look. It's not. That means something. they all supported the belief in one God. There was no such thing that they was polytheistic. That's not true. That was just some European mess. They all had one God system, whether it was the Dogon, Ama, the Zulu, Inkulunkulu, Olodumare in the Yoruba. They were all one God systems. The African religious tradition was understood that God is both near and far. He wasn't in the sky. He's in the rocks. He's in the trees. He's in the ground, the water. It's all God. The African religions definitely stressed ancestral veneration. Now, this is John M. Biddy's collection of the similarities of all African religions. They all have this system, which must say something about, you know, its development. And then ancient African religions stressed the necessity of balance between one's collective identity and responsibility as a member of the society, and one's personal identification and responsibility. This one is what was lost in the transatlantic slave system. I think this point has to really be going back to the necessity of balance between your collective identity, who you are. It's just not just about I, me, you. It's you have a responsibility as a member of the society to each other. We lost that. We really lost that one. And that's one we have to look at. But however, most traditional African religions all had that. A key theme also in African religion is the profound respect for nature. They had definitely a respect. They took care of the water, the plants, animal life. If the crop was good and it was plentiful and they did a lot and it produced a lot of products, and at the end of the season, there was a lot left, they simply took what was left and put it back into the earth. They didn't put it in cans and sell it and try to do other things. They put it back into the earth and asked the earth to make sure that it would produce again during the next season. And then most African religions support the idea that God was androgynous, that God is a woman and has an androgynous development, that God produces, provides life. Only a woman can do that. The man can support, help, but the woman has to do the production. She has that offspring 9 months before the world ever sees it or touches it. And so she has a responsibility to see that taken care of, and the male has a responsibility to make sure that nothing is disturbed in that process. That's traditional African religion. And African religions support the idea that life is immortal and it is circular. We do not live in a linear world. You start at the beginning and get to the end, and after that, there's nothing else. That's not where the African system was. Most Africans view the earth as being the symmetrical equivalent of the sky. So above, so below. You want to understand the heavens is the same as below. And then fire was viewed as a symbol of life and water the essence of life. In African worship, sacrifice is the keystone of the religion. You have to be willing to sacrifice something, give up something. The Christian church tried to do that, incorporate that system in a lot of ways, but it did it strangely. There is a system that you must make sacrifices. Death is the unavoidable consequences of life. You cannot avoid it, but it's not the end. And then lastly, the African religion and philosophy believes that that which is hidden is truer and more profound than that which is visible. And there's a lot of that particular in nature. You cannot see a tree grow, but it's in the earth, and you know that it does grow because you watch movement. You don't always know how, but it's the way it's done. And so those are things that we have lost and must get back to. Those are things that our people brought here with them. Those are things that they practice here on the planet once they came. There were different ways there, even in the transatlantic system. Dahomey, for instance, the kingdom of Dahomey, which is the home of the Iwe people, during their transatlantic system, war and captivity, and brought over to here, they brought those things with them. And regardless of what a lot of the historians and sociologists have said, it's just not true. Last week we talked about some of those that were, who had mentioned that. One African-American had mentioned, E. Franklin Frazier indicated that the Africans lost everything when they got here. So whatever they got here, they had to gain from Europeans. It's not true. The enslaved people that were coming over found themselves en route to the French and the Spanish islands in the Caribbean. And the Caribbean looked a lot like, you know, Africa in many ways. Those in captivity were largely forced into Catholic West End. A lot of it was the Spanish, and they had captured the West Indies. And obviously Catholicism was there. And they were forced to take that on as their own system. And they took it, but they created it in some ways very similar to theirs. There's an argument about whether or not that was done. I say that it wasn't in that biggest way. I think there may be similarities to some events because of the fact that the African system was so solid. They didn't need to have to change it to fit the Catholics were changing it to fit the African system. But anyway, that's another whole discussion. We see that this African system has power. We saw that in August of 1791 when the Haitians captives revolted, and they used the Badoon philosophy from their priests who consulted based on oracles to guide the military strategies and the revolutionaries who defeated Napoleon Bonaparte's army, which was one of the most powerful physical armies on the planet, but not the spiritual army. They declared independence on January 1804, and we know the story of Haiti and the Haitian Revolution. We saw that system put into place. And one might say, well, look at them now, it didn't work. Well, that's because they did some ugly things. They made the Haitians pay the French reparations. We talked about that in one of our past programs. And that was a killer. But anyway, the religious system, which they called here voodoo, continued to be practiced, mainly in New Orleans. There was something unique about New Orleans because the French allowed the Africans to continue to practice their system. They were not threatened by it in the way that the English were. And so they went down to a place in New Orleans that they had designated as their gathering ground, called Congo Square. And they would practice their English dances, their chants. They would use their systems that they would put together and use them and pass among each other. A lot of the herbs that grew in those warmer climate places, they were very familiar to African people. And so things like the amulets were used a lot. And you would see people walking around with amulets. And even the amulet system survived even into other parts. In my hometown, my grandmother, Big Mama, I talked about earlier, made my brother and I wear an amulet. I didn't know what it was, but it was consisted of some herbs. It had some bugs in it. And what it was designed to do, she said, to keep fever away from me so that we wouldn't get the fever. And to do that, and they knew how to do that. They would get, she would be, get consulted with somebody in our community who really know the real deal. You had to get the right kind of bag, the right kind of string, the right kind of material, and everything. And I learned that in later years about the specifics of it. And then also, one of the things that we found is that in the early years of the settling of America, it was the Africans that saved the colonies from being wiped out by disease. When the Pilgrims came to America and landed in Plymouth Rock and Massachusetts and all those areas, those kids were dying of colic. They were getting disease called colic. And it was the Africans who had been brought over in captivity and as indentured servants to work with those so-called Pilgrims, the so-called Puritans, to help them, knew how to save them. And so what they did is they went out and they gathered certain herbs and oils and put them in pots and stewed them and cooked them so that they became a medicinal product. And they were given to the kids to rub over their bodies, and they were healed. And the fathers, the husbands, saw that and said that that was witchcraft. And you know the story of the Salem witch trials, but that's a lot deeper. You have to really read that. That was an African voodoo priestess who lived among them that was the center of the story. And this was written by a guy named Peter Wood, who wrote a book on the Salem witch trials. And what he talked about is her, and I'm not quite sure it's some combination about who what her total ethnicity was, but her name was Tabutia, and she was helping those women learn, teaching them chants and how to boil that water, and while it was boiling, they would say chants over that water, and then they would take that oil and water of the mixture that was cooked and rub it on those children, and they would be saved. And so obviously the women didn't care about what their husbands thought. But nevertheless, they were burnt at the stake. But these are just examples of how that has happened. All of my life I've heard of the voodoo doctors, the root doctors that have operated throughout the South. A very major place was South Carolina. I had Dr. Bussett live there. There was a Dr. John down in New Orleans, and these folks had roots, and they knew how to work those, and people would go down and seek that. They said that when Dr. Buzzard was operating during his time, they said the traffic was backed all the way up to Alabama, people trying to get down to him to get those urns. And I recall this even in my day, hearing the elders talk about that. And that whole answer. And then Madame Laveau out of New Orleans, that story. Well, what am I saying? I'm saying that these systems that our ancestors brought with them have been sources of salvation. And they have been used over and over by our ancestors. I'm talking people in the 20th century have used them. They understand them. My big mama was, a born again, was a Bible-toting, scripture-quoting Christian. And you better not tell her about saying anything about her Jesus. But I've watched her do stuff that I did not know. I watched, for instance, when my brother had a breathing problem. And he was a baby. He had to breathe. He couldn't breathe. She had to do things. And she got this woman, I don't know who she was, to provide her with some things. And what he did is he provided her with some kind of a ointment that she would rub on his chest when he got sick. And that ointment was lamb's fat, was mutton. And mutton is the same product that was put into original Big Salve in the early years. And it would bring out the phlegm and the fever that was in a child. These were systems that were used and continue to be used, even sometimes still today. All of us are herbal tea drinkers, and these herbs have properties. Well, our children have got to be, this has got to be passed on to that next generation of coming and how to use that. But like I said, Christianity was structured to destroy it and to distort it in some ways and to talk about it and say that this is devil worshiping and all of that, and it scared us, and there were going to be ghosts and hanks that were coming to get you, and you know, you got to win zombies. And all of that. All of that is a distortion of a spiritual system that was really one of salvation. And I think everyone that we have here online today knows that. And if we were to and we're going to open the lines up and talk a little bit about that and give you a chance to share your experience of how that was used. And maybe even suggest how that we can carry that on now. And when you go back and there are books that provide you a good resource of understanding sometimes what was done. If any of you have ever been down to the Gullah Islands, for instance, oh, that's totally African spiritual system, because that was untouched. The Gullah religion is a part of that religion that we're talking about from the Iwe people we know today as Benin, and they were able to continued to practice that untouched. And they can tell you stories and they're real good systems of things and understand how that. I heard something about, I remember I had gone down to South Carolina and we were with some friends, and we went and met with a Gullah family that they knew, and we were talking. And I remember this woman was talking about something called boo hags. And I couldn't understand what she was saying at first because she had that Gullah dialect. And so I'm saying, what is he saying? He's saying the boo hags. I said, what is a boo hag? They said they are creatures that live to suck the energy out of victims. They said they ride in the middle of the night. And the victims that they are after go into a deep sleep. And after the boo hag depletes their energy, when they wake up, they're tired and listless in the morning. And I know that feeling. I'm wondering if some boo hags got me. Sometimes that is the way you do things. And by the time they wake up, they said the boo hag is long gone. It has redressed itself in the skin of another victim before the sun comes up, so they can, you know, kind of move undetected among the living. And the people who understand that say they're just evil. They're just plain evil. They find their way into victims' homes through cracks, keyholes, and open windows. Now, this is obviously a mythology, possibly. But anyway, this is a guiding principle for people. And it's a way of explanation of how things are done. They say boo hags have an aversion to indigo blue, and they cannot enter a space that's painted blue. And I remember my parents had certain colors that they would use to paint the house, and they had to paint it that, and it meant something. And I mean, I didn't know. I remember we had the front porch. Our front porch was painted blue. The roof of it, the ceiling, was painted blue. And I don't remember why. My mother didn't tell me, but obviously they say that blue is something that wards off evil. And they did that. So anyway, these kinds of tidbits of information were survival mechanisms back there in those days. And now we would call them old-fashioned spooky stuff. But Dr. Buzzard was real. He was that elder doctor who, like I said, passed on. He has a long story. There's a biography of the work that he did and what he did in that town and those root workers. And a lot of what they did is understood by musicians, the blues players. That's where I started today off. There's a song about evil blues. They sang these songs. Muddy Waters, Dr. John, the Dr. John of New Orleans, the musician, played those songs and played that to help us understand better how that works. Those parades during Mardi Gras, even though Mardi Gras has a different other kind of meaning, but those parades display that. The Zulus, you have to talk to one of the people that's in the Zulu crew and let them tell you some of the things that they do and what it means in their group. That's the traditional African crew of New Orleans during the Mardi Gras time. And so all of that is a part of this African tradition that we have lost, or if not, we are losing to do. There are medicinal products that they use that we don't do anymore. I don't know how many of you have ever heard of sassafras tea, for instance. Sassafras tea is some of the nastiest herb you ever want to put your mouth on, but it's a miracle worker. It was the penicillin of that world. Grows natural, doesn't cost you a dime, and you can use it. There's a book where the Europeans had taken and began to treat it. It was called East of Eden, EAST, East of Eden. And that book has in it, for instance, a lot of recipes that are made out of natural herbs that obviously you can find and get hold of and can be used to make powerful medicinal herbs. And I talk about that because now we are in this health crisis with COVID and some of the things that are going on. There's a need to go back to herbal stuff. There are some things that can fight, and it's been shown that they can fight COVID. It can help kick your immune system in a way. We've talked about on this program and some of our other programs that we have, we've talked about some of those herbal products that we can use. Well, these are things that I just wanted to break the ice. This is a long conversation. You can't necessarily do this in obviously a 2-hour, and I wasn't trying to do that. I wanted to broach the subject tonight because we've got to go back here. We can't. I don't care what you say about this system. We've got to come back to this and find a way to use it in our children other than talking about zombies and some of that stuff you see in Hollywood. Because Hollywood will take a concept or idea of yours and will destroy it completely. And I think about all the things that they've done. They got this Candyman tale that's out. And it's just a distortion of African spiritual principles. You know, and I've watched some. I haven't watched the new one. New one done by a black guy. Jordan Peele does this newest one. And because you're dealing with the spirit world that's real strong. That's real. Whether you believe it or not, it's real. The spirit world is real. That was spirits will come back and talk to you and their principles and ideas of how they work. That's one of the things my grandmother, that's one of the memories that I would never forget, is I was sitting one day on the couch with her. We were listening to the radio because TV was kind of not in yet. We had a TV, but you couldn't watch it until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon because the programs didn't come on until 4 or 5. You didn't have anything come on in the daytime. So we were sitting on the couch. I was sitting on the couch with her, and I was young. And we were sitting there, and she was blind. And she beginning to lose her sight really bad. And so we were just sitting there. And a picture on the wall fell. And I said, and she said first, the picture fell. I said, uh-oh, something to that effect about the fail. She said, what do you want, Guilford? And I looked at her, and that was my grandfather's name. His name was William Guilford Rogers. And she said, Guilford, what do you want? And I looked at her like she was crazy. I said, Grandpa, who are you talking to? She said, hush, boy, be quiet. I'm talking to Guilford. He's trying to tell me something. And I'm totally stunned, so I'm definitely going to shut my mouth because I don't know what she's talking about. And in later years, as I got older and I considered, I said, Grandma, you remember that time that picture fell? And you said, what do you want, Guilford? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, he was coming back to ask me to do something, or telling me something, or telling me to watch out for something. And I just couldn't understand that, you know, at that time. But as I grew older, I began to understand how that worked and what that meant, but how it had been spooked and demonized so to the point that we were afraid to broach it and talk about it. So with that, I'm going to go here and open up. But like I said, though, it's a tricky area. It's very hard to obviously introduce this to young people because of the fact that they have been introduced to something else. Every last one of my grandkids watches the zombie movies, all that zombie stuff. And they'll argue you down about what that is if you try to tell them something that is. I ask them, what is that all about? And you just should hear them, and they said, you know, they can't die. You know, and then you hear the discussion. Even they know the theory of it, but they don't know where it's coming from and know what it's about. But anyway, it needs to be redone, revised, and hopefully somebody from, you know, that's all of us who say we woke, can be woke enough to find out how we can bring this back in. It could very well be a key to our liberation, and that's what we need to do and be able to do that. So with that, I think I want to kind of open up and ask you your opinion. I'm going to take a few discussions before I go to half of the hour. We know that Yoruba, Igbo religions are often practiced today. They're very active communities throughout America, and with that, a lot of us can embrace that because those are principles that still stand. The Yoruba and the Igbo philosophy systems are still in place. The Kemet systems are still in place. The ancient Kemet theories and practices and ideologies are there. We could always get people there, but that's still going to take an effort to get folks to embrace that. So I'm going to go and open up the lines a little bit, and I asked some of you to give us your idea, your thoughts, and how to make this work. Brother White, what do you think? I always come to you, I lean on you to open up and break the ice for us a lot of times. What are your thoughts on this system? Is it any relevance to it at all, you think? Is it a need for us to talk, or are we wasting time doing that? What are your thoughts? What do you think? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and to everyone else listening on the show.
Yes.
African system is based on love. Mm-hmm. A pure kind of love. Not a materialistic, not anything that we know of in European ideology that we deal with that's all phony. Mm-hmm. And the love that a parent has for a child.
Mm-hmm.
And all that that parent wants for the child is what's best for the child.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not teaching the child materialism. It's not based on you being better than somebody else, you having more than somebody else. It's just based on a pure love. So everything that you do, everything that you say, is to pass that love from you to that child.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to make the child feel safe and secure so that that child can develop.
Right.
When that child experiences that love, it returns that love. It feels comfortable. It feels glad. It starts smiling. It starts laughing just by being held.
Mm-hmm.
And that love is pure. This is something Europeans don't have. Everything Europeans do, there has to be some type of material return.
Exactly.
So that it's really hard to explain. If you look at animals like a lion, and the lion female that raises the cubs, she's not able to tell the cub, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this because I love you. And I want you to be this, and I want you to be the best at that, and I want you to have great accomplishment. It's just doing what comes natural, and that lion will give its life to protect that cub.
That's right.
And that's what that's what Africans were doing. The whole family and the village as an extension, it was all about love. So when that love is there, you're not going to steal from somebody that you love.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to steal or hurt or harm people that you love. And they're not going to do that to you.
That's true.
So in that environment comes the safety and the confidence that you need to function every day. In this environment that we live in right now, we're scared every day.
Yes, we are.
We're dealing with anxiety every day. And the things that you've already talked about, when you was with your mother, when was you with her when you was afraid?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't exist. It didn't exist. Because you had the confidence to know that as long as that person was around, everything was going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that love did for you, and that's what made you give back, and why you're still holding on to that today. But you have to be able to create that situation.
Yes.
How do you create that situation in a European-controlled environment? You can't even raise your children the way you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to raise your children to outdo and outthink and be better than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to most of the rap music, what do they talk about?
Mm-hmm.
I can do this. I'm the best at this. I'm the best at the other. Nobody can mess with me. It doesn't say anything about loving anybody else, and that those things are not important.
That's true.
Being rich was not important. In the African village, who was rich? It wasn't about somebody being richer than somebody else. It wasn't about wearing brand name clothes and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't about young people going and sitting out in front of a store all night to get the first one to get a pair of sneakers. What kind of value system is that?
Definitely agree. Definitely agree.
So the family unit, whenever black people get together by themselves, you see this start to happen again. In the community where if somebody is not doing well, somebody else give them a helping hand.
Yes, always.
And I know you know about this because me and Bruce talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the, I would say in the 60s, if you was in Durham and you was driving your car and something happened, you opened that hood, within 2 or 3 minutes, somebody would stop and help you.
That's right.
If you was walking, somebody would stop and give you a lift.
That's true.
Everybody helped everybody else and didn't want nothing for it. And if you helped me and I helped somebody else, then everybody would be helped. But if somebody give you a boost right now, they want $5, $10 for it.
That's right. That's a fact.
It's been materialized, mm-hmm. a value system based on European principles. Mm-hmm. As soon as you went to somebody's house, they would ask you, was you hungry?
That's right. Yeah, I remember that was a standing joke about that. The day they asked you, do you want a beer?
Yeah, I was with Bruce one day, and he went to visit somebody he knew, and she was saying, "Yeah, I remember when Bruce had the store. I knew anytime I was hungry, I knew where I could go to get something to eat, whether I had any money or not."
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's a different type of value system, but it can only operate if it's not interfered with.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else tell you that you can have your mother arrested if she spanks you,
That's
if she
right.
punishes you.
That's right.
That's interfering with the way that we operated as a group.
That's right.
And the rules was the same everywhere. If you went over to your aunt's house, you had to do, you know, the same system was in operation over there.
Mm-hmm.
You better not go and open that refrigerator without washing your hands.
That's for sure.
But it was all based on love. Everybody taking care of everybody else and not wanting nothing for it.
Yeah, that's what we lost. That's what we lost. Got to get it back.
That's how the destruction of the black family.
Mm-hmm. Major destruction.
I remember as a child, Christmas time, we would go to my grandmother's house, and that's where we would open our gifts, and we would eat, and my grandmother would play the piano and sing. I remember the group being together,
mm-hmm.
the family being together, and eating and talking and singing and playing as more valuable than the little gifts that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted those things then, but when I look back on it, what was most important to me was that family setting. If I could have something again, that's what I'd want, not the gifts, not the little trinkets.
Right. Yeah, those were powerful moments. We got a chance to learn each other.
And it was about honesty and decency.
Yes.
It was about respect.
Mm-hmm.
If you was outside playing and you saw your neighbor and they was carrying their packages. You stopped what you was doing, and you carried their packages for them.
That's true. Yeah, that's the world we came from. That's the world.
And that was systematically destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta drugs and prison and everything else.
Got to get back to it. Got to get back to it. Let me ask Sister Yan, do you think it's possible that we can override this attempt to distort our people's spiritual legacy, which obviously is a part of the captivity process? You know, I mean, to say that they shouldn't have done this, you can't do that, because this was captivity. And in captivity, you got to make sure that the captive is subdued, as we were talking earlier. So the question is, can we get back, which means that you're going to have to fight the process that puts you in it, because they're not just going to willingly open up and allow it to happen. So how do we do that? What do you think is possible here?
Well, first I want to give my greetings and greetings of love to everybody.
Yes, ma'am.
Love, we really do need that. I heard that mentioned, Brother Herbie mentioned, and it's very, very critical. And my condolences to Brother Timothy. I feel very, very sad.
Yeah, he's
very sad. He's usually such an upbeat brother, and yeah, just to imagine what he's going through, oh, man.
Yep.
You know, but those are the realities of life.
That's right.
And people leaving out of here, you know, so many now, I can't even keep up.
Mm-hmm.
But can we get this back?
Yes.
Can we?
Yes, that's kind of the focus of the question. You know, is there a chance for redemption here?
Only one way.
Okay.
And Brother White said it. We got to separate from this environment. This is an environment. These people are about destruction, period.
Mm-hmm.
Have been, always will be, destruction.
Right.
And as long as we're trying to fit in and be accepted and we drink all the poison, There's no chance. We have to get away from the sickness. It's just like COVID, you know?
Right.
If somebody has COVID, you can't hang around them.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And these people have some kind of crazy COVID-like, you know, pathology. You got to get away from them. And you know, you were saying about, you know, something in the beginning about, you know, talking about something too much or something like that. You know, all of our issues are so critical. We have to talk about them. I had to say this. We have to talk about them until we don't have to talk about them anymore.
Right.
That means until they're no longer an issue that's damaging us.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we're being damaged by these things and impacted by these things, we have to keep talking about it, and we have to keep doing about it. But we got to do both,
mm-hmm,
because there's always somebody that has to learn. There can be, every week there can be somebody new that's learning something, you know, that was said last month, but they didn't hear it, but it's being said again now. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So, yeah, we have to keep on talking about this stuff.
Yes, we do.
The day we stop is the day we're defeated.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we have to get away from this destructive environment. You know, I was listening to, you know, your opening, Doc. The things you said were so deep, you know, about our spirituality. And I do want to talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
And, you know, and just in reference to what Brother Herbie White was saying first, that loss of community, the loss has been so damaging that it is literally part of what's driving our young people to self-destruction.
Mm-hmm. Really self-destruction.
And when, Every, you know, Brother Herbie will say something almost every time that just sticks to me as truth, because I've worked with people, with so many types of people. And when he said that he'd rather, something about he'd rather have the love than the things, mm-hmm. you know, that as a young boy, the love was the most important to him than some kind of gift or whatever. I see that in these young people. You know, I see mothers trying to give them things, and they don't want things. They want the love.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to brothers talk about, you know, just the way Brother Harvey was talking about how, you know, when they grew up and having the extended family around them, and that's what made them happy. They didn't need 50 pairs of sneakers.
That's right.
It's like that movie Soul Food. Remember how that little yeah. boy, he the most important thing for him was to see his extended family together, not just his parents.
Right.
And Big Mama, the role that she played. So, you know, as I was listening to you two brothers, I was saying, you know, what's going to happen when we leave? Because mm-hmm. the mindset that, well, not the mindset, the culture that we're, this is our culture that we're talking about. As it leaves, and if there's nobody to continue it, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do we deal with this? You know, we keep making attempts, and, you know, as been said, you know, things get shot down. The most effective that I've witnessed was the Black Nationalist Movement.
Right.
Because all of our culture was embraced. You know, right in Brooklyn, you know, at the East and different other places, all of our culture was embraced.
Yes.
You know, when you talked about the language being taken away, yes, boy, they did a job on us with that. You know, but we learned, and it's still supposed to be so, that Swahili should be the universal black language for African people,
mm-hmm.
rather.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's happening with that now, but in the 70s, you know, that was a big issue, you know, that everybody in the black nation learned Kiswahili. That
right.
that would be our language.
Yeah, I think there's a movement to try to put that back. I think the African nationhood group out of Ghana is installing that school of thought. So you're right on target. You're right. I think they're pushing that.
Well, we better get on with it. We better get on with it.
Right.
Because we need all that we can get. But when you were talking about spirituality, you know, our worldview, our spiritual worldview, the African worldview, is literally the opposite of the European.
Mm-hmm.
And so
definitely.
Part of what we need to do is everything that they do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the brothers was saying this last week, you know, do the opposite. With their greed and capitalism, do the opposite of that. Their
mm-hmm.
materialism, do the opposite of that. Their violence, do the opposite of that within our communities. Of course, it's easier said than done. Because the damage that has been done, you know, to us has been psychological, excuse me, in addition to brute force.
Right.
So those two, that combination has just seared so much into us that we need some kind of surgical, I just thought of something. We need some kind of surgical process, and that would be the spirituality.
Right. Yeah.
At least a major part of that would
back.
Be the spirituality.
Right, you got to put that back in there.
Yeah, because in our spiritual system, now, you know, of course, the most popular across the globe of our spiritual systems is some form of Ifa,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, called, depending on where you are, it's called different things, Voodoo, you know, Lukumi,
right.
Safaria. The different, you know, names for the same system, very similar system, system of divinations and the system of healing. And even the indigenous folk from Hawaii, you know, and Australia and the red black folk that were here before the Europeans invaded, and, you know, Japanese, most non-whites have a similar spiritual system based on ancestral.
That's right.
Veneration or honoring and consulting with the ancestors, so interacting with the ancestors,
mm-hmm.
and a respect for nature and using nature for medicinal purposes in addition to, you know, eating and feeding ourselves and whatnot. We have a relationship with nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the European that sees everything as something to be exploited.
Right, right.
That's why we got to do the opposite of them.
Got to do the opposite.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because they're predators.
Right.
You know, they really are predators. And I was, you know, I was thinking about this today. Predators, what they do well and it's one of the reasons that they were able to get us and they keep getting us. And oppressing us and killing us and all the crap that they do to us. Predators study their prey. They spend... I'm laughing because this is so insane to me that it's like I really get it. They spend their time studying their prey.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Every move we make,
definitely.
Everything we think, the foods we eat, the music, everything, the way we learn.
Right.
They study us like lab rats.
And write books about it.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And you know what we do?
What's that?
We argue about being Republican versus Democratic.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You know? Yeah, and it's like this BS that they throw out to us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be a Republican, Democrat. You got to vote, not vote, you know, and all this trickery. I'm starting to see that a lot of this is their distractions that keep us chasing something, trying to fit into this system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
While they're studying us, they know what to throw out and make us go crazy, and they know when to put out a George Floyd.
Right. Yep. That's
they
right.
know when to do these things and get everybody running to, you know,
up.
This issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what in the hell were they up to when everybody's attention was on George Floyd?
Right. That's exactly right.
See, that's how predators think. We don't think that way. We react, and we're trying to take care of business. But they're sneaky. So that's something we need to pay more attention to, studying them. Because one of the things, when you talk about them taking away our language, that can start to sound, I'm not saying for you, but when we hear that, you know, a lot, it'll start to sound a little cliche or redundant. But if we really look at that,
mm-hmm.
what they did, everywhere they went to invade, they made the people stop speaking their language.
Exactly.
That was forced. So when we say they took away our language, I want to be clear that they forced us to stop speaking our language.
Right.
But before they did that, you know what they did? They learned the language.
Mm-hmm.
They came in, they learned how to speak the various languages, Yoruba and, you know, the different ones I can't think off the top of my head right now. But they learned how to speak those languages. And then they forced us into... If you know, they were Europeanizing and Christianizing us, so they forced us into their cemeteries or the seminaries, same thing, or their little bullshit schools, rather,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, but they just taught us European crap. And they forced their European systems on us.
On you, right. That's exactly right. That's it.
But they could only do that if they knew our language.
Right. And that's why I was saying earlier, you know, that is the behavior of, and you're saying it too, that's, you're saying it's the behavior of the predator, but it's the, and it's a captor. It's the person that has captured you.
Right. And I'm saying predator because.
I know, man. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want us to think about this word predator because I was watching something I never watched, is the Animal Planet. And I watched how the lion was, when he was getting ready to stalk the, I think it was a gazelle. I don't know too much about these animals, which I should know more. But he was stalking his prey. He was preparing. And he just studied every habit of that animal.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew exactly when to pounce.
That's right.
And that's what they do.
Yeah.
And most of us don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we call white man as devil, white man as Yakuba, whatever. It's a predator because of that. So that's very, very important.
Good point.
Because it will help us to deal more effectively
mm-hmm.
with the things that he's throwing at us. So let me finish up. What else was I thinking about? So our spirituality is very, very powerful. And, you know, Christianity, of course, they forced it on us,
mm-hmm.
no matter whether we like it or not,
right.
You know, whether we're committed Christians or not. The fact is it was forced on us.
Yes.
For the purpose of conquering, like you said, capturing,
right.
conquering, oppressing, and holding you in oppression. And what took us out of oppression? Voodoo.
Right. Sure did.
And not just Haiti. There were other places around the globe. Brazil, I think. Brazil. Was Quilombo in Brazil?
Yeah, Brazil. The Condolimi. The
Quilombo.
And the Maroons of Jamaica.
Yeah. So all of those were using African spiritual
that's
system.
Right. They sure did.
So that's what got us out of captivity when we were able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
duh, there's your answer. Now, another quick thing, some good news, because, you know, I'm feeling kind of sad about a lot of things that are going on, especially Brother Timothy. That's just really got me. But one of the good things that's happening is that, I'll say positive, this generation,
mm-hmm.
they're weaker. You know, than we were.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're embracing African spiritual systems. A lot of young people now are not going for the Christian thing. They're not going for the greed in the church.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to call on the ancestors. They're looking at alternatives.
That's right.
To Islam and Christianity, to organize religion, period, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a positive thing. I'll be somewhere and hear young people talking, you know, refer
right.
to the ancestors, and I'll just say, wow.
And, you know, they're also going back to nature.
A lot of young people
are going back to studying herbs
mm-hmm.
and other medicinal products that are in nature. You know, there's
mm-hmm,
a
mm-hmm.
bunch of young folks that are opening up herb shops,
mm-hmm.
Selling
farm.
Herbal teas,
mm-hmm.
and becoming that's a part. They don't sit down and drink liquor together and at the bar and beer. These are tea houses and coffee shops, and they serve herbs. I mean, just looking at it from that level, that's a shift in mindset. It really is, like you said. They're
mm-hmm.
shifting their mindsets.
Yeah.
You know, before it was to get together and let's have a drink and liquor everywhere and beer all over the place. And, you know, but they're not doing that. They're going now to more herbal products and coffee houses and coffee shops and going to the earth and even,
mm-hmm.
Having recreational activities using the earth, the natural. And that is a
fire.
Sign. That's a good sign. That's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one more quick thing, Doc, because, you know, this thing about, you know, African spirituality, because I wanted to talk more on that, but I don't want to hog up a lot of time. But African spirituality is so much about, first and foremost, it's about healing. We knew from the beginning that we were part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always worked. As far back as I'm learning, we've always worked with the universe, with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and so since we had that relationship with nature, our great brother, was it Washington, what's his name? Washington, George Carver, what was his name?
George Washington Carver?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the brother that made all, that was talking to the plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, George Washington Carver.
That's what, he didn't do nothing that we hadn't been doing for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's where
I shouldn't say it like that. Mm-hmm. He was doing, because that sounds negative. He was doing what our ancestors had done for thousands of years,
right.
And what our Africans are doing in the bush right now.
Right, exactly.
They're learning how to communicate with the
with nature,
plants and the trees, so that the nature is telling us, I'm a tree or a plant or whatever that you can eat and get nutrition from and use medicinally. I'm one that's poisonous, and you can't touch me. You know,
mm-hmm.
That actually is a part of our spiritual system. There's so much more, but like I said, I don't want to take up a lot of time, but our spiritual system is so much about healing. It's about getting real solutions to problems and concrete answers to questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a highly advanced system that when we understand how advanced it is, we get back to it, then we have a great possibility of separating and pulling ourselves back together. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's a good point to make about how do we get back. It's getting back through nature, because that is the source in which we have always operated. One of the greatest pieces of writing that I think that helped us understand that a lot in a simplistic way is the book that's written by Chinua Achebe called Things Fall Apart. And he kind of explains the traditional African system and its decline as the transatlantic slave trade was taking on its nature and how things had begun to shift out of that. Excellent piece of work. And I think that it very clearly can help us. I think that's something we can all go back and reread. Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe talks about the reverence they had for nature and how they worked together as a family and units and what that meant. I mean, we know that anyway because we've had some of that, those of us who are from the South or who lived in the South and had a chance even out of that system of captivity, we've understood how our families worked together. And you look at our writers who have written about the history of that, have always focused in on that family thing. Some of it has been negative, some has been positive, you know. And so I think you're right. You're right about that, to get that. Let me ask Sister Ann. Ann, Sister Ann, you got any thoughts on this, or you just want to listen? Or you have any thoughts about this idea of getting back what we lost? This is the Sankofa process.
No, Bill, I think I'm just listening tonight.
Okay, all right. Sounds good. Yeah, this is a Sankofa concept that we're dealing with tonight, going back and getting what you have lost so you can move forward. And we lost some things. Not devastating, but we've lost some things, and we need to go back. So, Sister Dee Dee, I think you're from down there in Mississippi. What did your big mama tell you about stuff? How did you? What are some examples of how she or somebody, whoever you were dealing with back in those days when you were a young girl, helped you understand about traditional life that possibly came from Africa? Any ideas you can share with us?
Good evening, family, and my condolences to Brother Timothy. And thanks, Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
But you know, Sister Young and Brother White know they summed it up so good. And Doc, that book you were just talking about, that's an awesome read, and you're right. It would be good to read that again.
Right.
I wasn't born in the South. I wish I were.
Oh, but, okay. I think you were born in the South. Okay. All right.
I wish I were, Dr. Rogers. And
okay.
Then from there, I wish I'd have been in New York. But anyway, Grandma was down South, though. Grandma was from Slidell, Louisiana. And Grandma wasn't no joke. And I believe that was Brother White that was saying, when back then, when you would come in town or come to people's house, if you didn't have nowhere to stay, You always had a relative's house you could stay at.
Always.
And yes, and you're right. When you came in, Grandma was like, "Boy, you want something to eat? Child, sit down there. Let me get you a plate." You know, it was just so warm and welcoming. You know, was always welcoming. And as Sister Yan said, I just love her. These beasts that we're dealing with now, and that we have picked their ways up, or should I say, been programmed. Now they've some kind of way done programmed us. I mean, we didn't fell off, Doc. Just today, my daughter called me this morning and told me she works at a hospital. She said someone then came around and went into the parking structure and right there by the ER and took a hammer and bashed out people's car windows and vandalized their cars. You know, and like you said earlier, Doc, what in the hell, excuse my mouth, what in the hell's going on? You know, so now, earlier, I'm listening to the Tory Lowe, the Black Radio talk show, so now they're talking about getting money from the government to get some kind of cameras up because of all this speed racing up and down the street and this and that. Doc Rogers, I think it's something else coming down the pike. They're always using something to distract us while they got something else coming down the pike.
Okay.
They use 9/11 to spy on you. Now here it is. Now they're using another form of something. It's something going on, Doc Rogers, and I don't believe it's all black, black, black.
Okay.
I don't believe that. That's a bunch of bull crap. That's another distraction.
I got you. You know, and like I said earlier.
And then, Doc Rogers, I just want to say this, quote unquote, they mentioned on the radio earlier where that boy's mother, that Clark guy, which they claim killed himself, we know better than that one. But anyway, his mother, out of her mouth, said that her baby was beaten. Now, he beat himself up, then shot himself. Something don't smell right, Doc Rogers.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is.
It is. Something don't smell right.
And a lot of it, I think, is really being induced with chemicals.
What monster could kill a baby?
Yeah.
I can't say no more, Doc. It's horrible.
I think that we got to take in consideration again, and I keep saying this, we are in a system of captivity. And that's a lot of times different than other things. Like, you know, I like to watch those animal programs, and I like to look at how they operate. And I can think about sometimes what the wildebeest, for instance, would tell its children about the lion, because they know that the lion is waiting to eat them. And the system of that, but at least on the plains and the Serengeti, wherever they live, it's open to everybody, and all of the resources is open to everybody, so you can kind of create some escape routes. You know, I'm just using that as a, if they had the opportunity to have that kind of discussion, to get away from the lion, because the deal is that the lion is waiting. That's his job. That's what he lives for. Is to wait for that wildebeest and those other weaker animals to eat for dinner, and so that goes with the territory. So if there's a certain water hole that the lions drink from, you know, don't go over there and go find another one to go to. But the deal is, I think with us, we're in a system. Everything, all of our movement is a captivity movement. Whatever we do, when you go to the grocery store, you are going to a system that's a part of captivity, the grocery store. And so you could be windows beat out, you know, because you're in a captive system of doing that. And I think a lot of this is being motivated and mitigated with the use and dispensation of chemicals. They're giving chemicals and products to people to use to keep this system of captivity moving. So the police don't have to do it. The junkies are going to do it. The pill heads are going to get you. You know, and they're going to be the ones to stop you from doing that. And like I said, some of this horrendous stuff that we're hearing, I mean, a grandfather killing his grandson because he stole $5 from him.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. There's something else going on in there. As you said, you're right.
Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
Dr. Rogers, can I say one more thing? My daughter was telling me today she heard where now, I guess, for this fake Halloween guy, which I'd be glad when our people get away from these fake holidays. But anyway, now they're laughing and talking about dropping the weed gummies in children's candy bags or whatever. How?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, just how deceitful and dirty.
Yeah, that's right. Lacing that candy with stuff. You're right. That's exactly right.
They
did it in New York years ago. Somebody was doing that in certain areas. Lacing the candy with all kind of stuff.
They did it in Chicago. They did it here.
Right.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's captivity system. And that captivity system is designed to do that. It's designed to implement horror like that to keep you in captivity. You know, I think we got to understand it from that position. I really
Dr.
do.
Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
May I? I don't want to just interrupt.
Right, go ahead, because I want to grab a couple other people in there right after you get to finish. So go right ahead.
Because you keep mentioning captivity, and I forgot another thing I wanted to say that's very critical. When it comes to our own spiritual system, not the ones that were forced on us,
right.
Our own, because a lot of us don't really know what it entails, because I'm going to say this. You can read a lot of things. The only way you really understand Ifa, Voodoo, Santeria, all these, you have to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be involved. It's something that's interactive. You have to sit at somebody's feet.
Okay.
You have to be in an ile or a house with others that are practicing. That's the best way you learn. And one of the most powerful things I have learned is that inherent in our systems is a defense system.
Mm-hmm.
We have ways to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why they spooked it out so badly and told us voodoo was this horrible, evil thing, what it actually means, the essence of God or the divinity within. There are a couple of, you know, ways of saying it, but, you know, it talks about talks about the divinity
right.
in us and with us in the universe and connecting with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in it, it has a system of defense. But
mm-hmm.
as long, again, as we're spooked out and scared of it, we don't have a way to defend ourselves. But I want to say to us, we do have a way out of this.
Okay.
And it is through our spiritual system. We just got to stop running from it.
And that's what I wanted to talk about tonight. How do we get to do that? And I appreciate that idea. That is exactly right. It is our spiritual system. We've confirmed that tonight. And that's what we can take away. So we got to then find our way to do it. It's not a one-day
mm-hmm.
event. You can't go one day and sit down and sing some songs and read a book and say, that's it. I'm saved for the rest
mm-hmm.
of the week. It don't work like that. It's got to be everyday work that's done in order to, you know, like I said, implement it and make that work with our children.
Go to South Carolina to the African village. I think it's called the African village. Doc, you've been out there before.
Yeah, down in Beaufort. In Beaufort, yeah, that's right.
There are places that we can go and be amongst people who are practicing our own spiritual system before the Europeans and the Arabs force their stuff on us and see and experience for ourselves.
Exactly.
Mm.
And
exactly.
Believe me, it will attract you if you have any sense in your head.
Right, I agree. I really appreciate some of our listeners who have been on, and they've been very quiet. I have a caller on from 240, area code 240-234. I don't know if you'd like to say something or make a comment, or you're just listening. Area code 240-224. Just listening? Okay. All right. What about area code 240-351? Are you just listening, or would you like to say something?
Yeah, I'm just listening tonight.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate that. I think she might have, Dr. James was on earlier. She may have gone. All right. Got a new person. I know you haven't heard much of the conversation, but I know you just came in, 414-573. Any thoughts, any comments you want to make?
Oh, good evening, Doc, and to all the listeners.
Good evening.
Thank you. I know if you're talking about our African spiritual system.
Right.
I spoke with a number of spiritual priests that even have gone and practiced down in Georgia. In the place in Georgia, the spiritual place the sister was speaking of.
You're talking about
but there's one thing I asked them about our spiritual beliefs, and I said this. If it was so powerful and strong, how did they put us into this slavery sick bed? How was it? And that's the question that always enters my mind is, how did this happen? And so we do have a defense system. Having known our spiritual system, how was it that if we didn't ignite it or put it into play so that we would not have been brought into captivity?
Mm-hmm. And what was their answer? You were asking this to somebody specifically?
Well, that's the question I always ask, and that's what I wonder, how is it that we, that this was allowed if our spirits were,
I see what you're saying.
Friends, I'll say, what about the voodoo and that? And they'll say,
how
powerful was it? How powerful is it if it allowed us to go into this, to be enslaved?
Well, one of the things that you're right, that is a good question to weigh, but you got to remember, I've been saying this, is that system of captivity. The captivity system was organized by religion. It was the Catholic Church that implemented the Atlantic Ocean slave trade. And it is the one that put into place all of the principles and the teachings. So the captivity process, the going into the lands of Africa, they went in with preempted notions about who they were going after. And mm-hmm. one of the things that they wanted, they said, is that, first of all, they weren't human. And then the second thing is that they haven't been blessed by God. And so as a result of that, we are going to have to create a real strong physical captivity structure. And so I definitely believe that the Africans, when they were placed, were using their spiritual system to do things. Some of the information we've gotten from the writers, and most of that information obviously wasn't from those that were in captivity, but from those, for instance, the ship doctors were one of the ones that documented a lot of the activity on those ships. And they said that they kept humming and doing some singing stuff and pointing to the moon. He didn't understand what it was, and they weren't able to explain what that was, but there was a process. There's several narratives that were written by observers who were watching the Africans do stuff and trying to understand what it was they were doing. So probably some of that was that. But see, the system of captivity was a physical core one. That was the problem, is that, you park a ship up on the shore, Africans didn't necessarily think that it was trouble like that. They were curious. And the next thing you being yanked aboard and going into what they was called a door of no return, never to come out again. And that was a nightmare. Just think about if you were to be yanked up somewhere, or kidnapped, thrown into a car, and taken to another country, and what that would do. So again, I'm not justifying or anything necessarily of what that was like. I'm just, you know, kind of speculating on that process. And how it was.
Doc, can I offer an answer?
Let me finish. Let me finish, and I'll get to you. So that was, I'm just kind of explaining what that was doing psychologically and traumatically. It was trauma, total trauma, made you force you to give in to that. Sister Young?
Yes. Sister, I'd like to answer that a little, just short answer since we don't have time.
Okay, you got 5 minutes.
We should revisit this part, Doc. The question that she asked is very important.
Yeah, very important.
The honest answer, because I asked the same thing for a long time before I even considered learning, you know, about these systems. And what I found out is that, number one, just because we had power doesn't mean that we were perfect. And it doesn't mean that we, all of our thinking was clear. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is that we have a beautiful, fantastic African worldview, but we also have our own dysfunction. And that's another conversation I'd like to have. Part of our dysfunction, sister, is that we are too welcoming, we're too helpful, and we're too giving and generous. So when a stranger comes in and does something to harm us, you know, and this is most indigenous people, we forgive easily, we welcome them in, and they do something crappy, we say, oh, we forgive you here. You want some of our minerals and, you know, some of our natural resources? Here, we'll share. You know, not understanding that these people are coming to harm you. And then again, when we see them do harm, we forgive and we keep welcoming them in. So they keep coming. So they see spiritual people as fools. Even though we have power, we're also too soft. We're not predators like them. So when they come after us, you know, we've already been gotten. And then we realize, oh boy, now we're in trouble. And then there are spiritual laws in the system.
But you're not saying that's a fault, is it? Is it a mm-hmm. fault that we're not
it's
aggressive?
A fault.
Say it again.
That we're not discussing. That's why I said we should have a serious discussion with some other priests on this subject, because a lot of people ask the same questions. You know, that's why I said we are not perfect. We have power, but we're not perfect. Sometimes we don't use our power in the right way.
Yeah, that's a discussion
you know?
We definitely need to have.
If a dangerous person comes to you, and if you have real power, and you see that they're dangerous, then your first reaction should be, all right, you can't come back here no more.
That's a good point.
But our reaction was, come on then, just like we do now.
Sister Yarn, I got to stop you. We got 1 minute. But very clearly, you're right. That's a discussion we definitely need to have. And I think that's a good point, Sister Marquita, that you ask. And maybe that's a discussion for, it is a discussion for another day. But anyway, I appreciate all of you for coming on tonight. This is a continuation kind of topic, and we were doing it. I just wanted to broach the subject tonight and look at it and raise the question and see what possibilities. And I think we've been able to extract some things that we can come back and talk about. And so let's keep that in mind. Hold those thoughts, Sister Yon, Sister Edwards, hold that. Let's come back, and we need to deal with that. That's going to create a very, very interesting conversation. So, again, thank all of you. I have a wonderful, safe week. Remember to keep in mind our prayers for Brother Timothy, who lost his partner last week, and we pray that he has strength. And God protects and soothes him and gives him the courage to keep on going. He's a good brother. All right. Have a good night, folks. Take care. And we'll see you next Tuesday right here at the Black Reality Think Tank.
magic woman. I'm a black magic woman. I'm a black magic woman. I got you so blind.